This is a podcast from Minute Media.
It would be a wolf's fun, eh?
On goes Paul. Steeple might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
Hello, boys and girls. This is the Wolves Fancast coming at you, part of the 90-minute network. Come in, settle down, grab a drink, as we have a lot to discuss on today's episode, believe you me. Adam here, discussing matters such as why John Moss is useless and why Andre Mariner has questionable integrity. Joining me to discuss such matters are Stu, Gully and Kim. How are you all? Have you collected your thoughts from Saturday? Have you calmed down, or have you got your Andre Mariner voodoo dolls on order? How are you feeling?
I'm chilled. I've got over it now.
I think, yeah, if we'd have done this podcast within an hour of the final whistle, it could have been very different. Very different.
It would have been X-rated.
Possibly.
For sure. Yeah. Well, we've got a lot to discuss. We've got a lot to talk about. So we'll jump straight into it. We'll start as ever. Before we get to the two major incidents that are probably going to take up a lot of our time on the podcast, we'll do what we normally do. We'll jump into, have a look at the lineups. Bit of a change, actually, for this game. So for our viewers on YouTube Live, you can see the lineup there on screen. Bruno opted to go with a five-man midfield for this game. So Huang was dropped. Do we think that was the right approach? So, Gully, do you want to kick us off? Did you agree with Bruno's thinking when it comes to this game?
Yeah, I was pretty comfortable with that, to be fair. I felt that Huang, to be honest, has been a bit off the boil recently anyway, and hasn't really contributed a fat lot, whether it be the Norwich game, the Liverpool fixture, and anything in between. So he's worth bringing him out of the firing line a little bit. And if you're being honest, those three in midfield need to kind of stretch a little bit wider and play a little bit wider than they normally would against Man City, just because of how they dominate possession. And really, the Raul and Adama pairing up front is what's worked for us in the past, and I didn't see why it wouldn't work again, to be fair.
Yeah, it was, and Traoré's kind of weird obsession with Man City as well. And I know I've got a couple of fans of Man City as friends. And I mean, Gaz has mentioned on Twitter a few times about how Traoré's value always goes up the day after he plays against them lot, just because he turns up and actually does things. So having him run right up front made perfect sense for me.
And I suppose the only other point to make on the lineup is just that the bench was a lot stronger, I felt. So prior to kick-off, I thought, well, at least, you know, you've only got sort of one goalkeeper and one sort of youth team player, if you like. At least we sort of had sort of the more senior players back on the bench, albeit with not many of them really likely to make an impact, but I thought that was sort of a positive, I suppose you could say, at the start of the game.
To be honest, Kim, I'm surprised anybody's complaining about our squad depth looking at that bench, honestly. Or what are you worried about?
I'll put that in my notes as well, to be honest. So when progress, at least there weren't two goalkeepers on the bench.
Literally.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, that literally, their central midfield was literally all of our three senior midfielders. That's all we got. Apart from the little comes on the bench.
I was thinking when Neves went down, I was thinking, so if Neves has to go off, who on earth is going to sort of play in centre midfield?
Kondo, I'd imagine. Wouldn't they? Luke Kondo's going to get his mouth to shine.
I'd love that, to see him just get chucked in there. That'd have been just fun to watch, wouldn't it? Baptism of fire.
It would have been up against what? Gundogan.
Yeah. What are you worried about?
You could have had a Conor Ronan situation again. He run the show. Who knows?
Conor Ronan was brilliant that day, to be fair. He was.
Look who asked for his shirt in the tunnel. So
bring him back. Bring him back.
Well, That's a lineup, say it the way. So let's give the people what they want. We'll jump into the first of the two big incidents, which is Raul, of course. Raul being stupid. You know, what was going through his head? I mean, first of all, the foul, would you say that was a foul? Was it a foul?
Yeah, it was a foul. And for me, I mean, I said it wasn't for the tackle because he got the ball. It wasn't for that. It was for the attempted pull, wasn't it? So 9 times out of 10, if you try and pull someone back, if you pull a shirt, you're going to get booked. But it was so half-arsed, and it was kind of, he tapped him on the shoulder. Nothing happened, and then he lunged in. So what is that, an accumulation? Is it because he attempted the tackle? Is that a booking? It was bollocks. It was bollocks. It wasn't a yellow card. It never has.
I think if you have a look at some of the tackles that were given yellows earlier in the game, you couldn't really argue with it, if you see what I mean. If the ref hadn't given yellows to, I think it was Rodri and Ruben Dias on Traoré, maybe. Once he's given them, he's in no position to not oblige with the yellow card, if you see what I mean.
There's no way that's a yellow card. There's absolutely no way. Yeah, okay, it's from behind, but I didn't see a pull. I just saw Raul get the ball. It was from behind, so okay, yeah, maybe it's a free kick, but it's not a yellow card, is it?
Well, especially when Bruno made the observation that literally the whole of Wolves, the rest of Wolves' team was all in front of the players. So how's he booking for that? I'm like you just said then, or like motion, it was like a tiny bit of arm, hand on the top of his shoulder, but it wasn't a pull, like, was it really?
Yeah, I think that's the point, isn't it? That normally that's like a breakaway where a team is on the attack and they're about to get at the defence. Usually Adama Traoré is normally the perpetrator of that kind of situation, and teams just foul him and then we run out of steam and whatnot. But it wasn't. It's not like it was a tactical foul. I think Ralph thought it was a genuine attempt to go and win the ball. So it was. It did feel harsh, but like I said, I think there'd been tackles similar, and you got to follow the precedent almost that you set.
But so, then what followed was absolutely, I was even more angry than the ref actually giving the foul and the yellow card, if that makes sense. I was even more angry that you could almost see that it was going to happen before it happened. You know, there was no need for him to just stand a yard away. And I don't know, maybe it was just a reaction because he was so annoyed that he thought he just made a great tackle and it wasn't a foul. He was just getting wound up and then just lost his head. But you can't do that. Like, I don't feel like he's a type of player who loses his head. It was just like a moment of madness.
Yeah. I think it wasn't the fact that he stuck a foot out, because he was there goading him for a good few seconds as well before he stuck his foot out. And I mean, in a way, you're kind of thinking, why is no one just getting him and dragging him away? But at the same time, he's completely in the wrong. And he's a 30-year-old man. He knows better than that. And yeah, I think you are right. He's just completely lost it. He's just lost the plot. He's one of them.
I'm keen to think about I'm keen to say, what's the etiquette of actually like moving away from a free kick? Because you see this all the time, don't you? Teams get a free kick in, I don't know, their own half, and they want to just put the ball down, take a free kick. And you see, it's 10 a penny, you see loads of players just stand right in front of the ball to stop them taking a free kick. And I guess by rights, the free kick taker is perfectly eligible or allowed to just kick the ball almost straight at them. But I saw that happen quite a few times. The ref just blows the whistle, gives them a warning, and tells them to get back. Whereas, I don't know, the ref just thought, because I've just booked you, what you're doing, and he's booked him again. I don't know. I just see that all the time.
That's funnily enough, did you see the Everton Palace game just before the third Palace goal? Seamus Coleman goes to smash they're winning a free kick in the corner. Seamus Coleman goes to smash the ball at Zaha, who's literally like a yard in front of him, misses it entirely, and they went and scored from losing the ball from that situation. So serves him right, really. But
That's a different scenario, isn't it? When the player hits the purpose, he just tries to get the other player booked by just kicking it against him. Whereas Raul, was literally a yard away, whereas usually when you see that scenario, like the player will pretend that they're like just moving away slowly, but Raul was literally on top of, like, literally a yard away and didn't seem like he had any attempt to try and move. And I think that was the difference between you normally see.
Letter of the law, the referee should be marking the yards, shouldn't he, in theory? But, and maybe that was Raul trying to create a bit more of time wasting and asking the referee to say, look, if you want me 10 yards, you're going to have to put me 10 yards away, kind of thing. But it's one of those situations where it's the middle of the pitch. It's not like he's having a strike at goal or anything like that. So I can't see a referee actually going out and making that decision to do it. So, and once you've had received that first yellow card, you've got to switch your brain on and actually figure out that it's probably not the best decision to make there.
I think it's the fact that he stuck his foot out. That's what's got him sent off. Well, then if the ball had just hit him and he'd been standing there, I think he would have got this is your final warning, pack it in kind of thing. But he's purposely lunged to stop the ball being played seconds after he's been booked. So, I mean, big fat John Moss has got no choice there, unfortunately.
When do you have any...
Is that his official name now?
Yeah. Well, he's got Mossy on his boots. That kind of says everything you need to know about the man.
So. Really?
Has he?
Yeah.
That's like... Yeah, wow, seen that celebrity rest Twitter page. That he must have featured on that then.
Yeah, it was...
Oh,
it was,
man, that's like Mark Clattenburg levels of loving yourself, that is, isn't it?
Yeah, he's one of them. But you look at him and you think, oh, he's not like that.
Incredible.
He doesn't seem to be the type. But I don't know if this is going to come up. There we are.
Wasn't he the one that got seen at goals, like, in the summer? He was just having a knockabout with his mates or something, I think.
You know what? That pitch is from Man City game last season as well.
Oh, wow. I think...
Put Tim Ford hat on, Stu. Yeah.
you can't get his hat underneath that hat.
you might have to change a bit of hat and make a substitute hat, yeah. I mean, when you saw it happen straight away, when you saw they put his foot out, did your heart sink or did you think... I mean, did you have any sympathy for him whatsoever, for Raul? Did
no,
you
it was and, always going to happen. I could see what was going to happen before it happened. And I don't know what... You could just tell. As Stu said, he lunged to stop the ball. He was about 1 yard... Probably not even a yard away. I've got no sympathy. And I love Raul, but that was probably the most stupidest thing I've ever seen him do.
It's so un-Raul-like, isn't it? Yeah. As well. He doesn't do normally stupid... He hasn't done stupid things for us, really. And then he's just gone and done that when we're really, really in the game where we need all 11 men on the pitch, to be honest. He's, I mean, you saw his frustration as well when you saw off the pitch. In fact, the crowd were having a bit of a game with him, weren't they, when he was going off the pitch. Every time he threw down his headband, all the City fans...
Oh, that was embarrassing, wasn't it? Oh, God.
But instead of just walking the pitch. He kept doing it.
Because he was just embarrassed, wasn't he? He was annoyed at himself. In the end, it was almost like, as it happened, and he just stood there, and then he just dawned on him, like, why did I do that? And I think he was just more annoyed / embarrassed that... I don't know what he was doing, like smashing his headband on the pitch.
When you look at his, when it zoomed in on his little face, and he looked like he'd been caught wanking by his mum, he was like, well, what have I done? That kind of thing. Not that that's happened to me before, you say it. my sister, yeah, but not my mum. He knew straight away what he'd done. So.
That has or it hasn't?
What?
He said that has happened.
He has been caught by his mum, confirmed.
No. I got
no, his sister.
I got caught by... This is featured on Cage Fighting Podcast, so you can go and listen over there. But I'll repeat it again for the audience at home. I was in the glory days of Smash Hits magazine over the middle poster of Louise Nerding.
Bad line. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Of who? Louise?
Louise Redknapp.
Oh.
I don't know. I'd have to Google that because it doesn't feel like a wise choice.
You're talking mid-90s here.
This is like...
Louise! Eternal Louise.
Yeah.
That's the one, yeah.
Why are you like... I'm confused. So why are you like, oh no, Gully? Weren't she like a sex symbol back in the day?
Yeah, she... Well, she don't look bad now. She don't look...
Kind of still is, yeah.
Yeah, no one looks as good as that picture of Lise Hurley on the beach yesterday, though.
Got boosters, do for you.
Yeah, boosters, kids.
Well, that was the first incident of the two, and obviously at this point in the game, we were thinking we're in up slack alley here when it comes to the rest of the game, because playing against City with 11 men is hard enough as it is. Now we've contended to play with 10, and then our cause wasn't helped at all by the incident involving Moutinho. And in my notes, I've just put VAR WTF. I'll be honest, there's the picture on the screen zoomed in for the people watching on YouTube. I'll be honest, when I watched this, I actually breathed a sigh of relief when I saw where it hit him, because I thought, well, at least there's no way that this can be a penalty. Fine, big fat John Moss has given it, but I thought, when this gets looked at by VAR, there's no way this will stand. It just can't. But obviously, how wrong I was. Who wants to start dissecting this? Who wants to have a rant?
Well, I was there, and I kind of, for my sins, as soon as it happened, I thought penalty. My first instinct was penalty straight off. From where we were, I was on the middle tier of the three. Because his arm was up, and I thought, oh, it's a penalty. But and then you kind of, this image got showed around everywhere. Again, it's the one with Moutinho's arm in the air for the audio listeners. And I thought, okay, well, yeah, it's harsh, unnatural position and everything else. And then you lot all laid into me saying you haven't seen it, which I hadn't. And then it took a good 2 hours later after the incident happened to see a video on Twitter of the other angle from behind, where you can clearly see it just hits his side. And then maybe even like the print on the ball brushes his underarm. It's complete bollocks. And for the entire football world and Dermot on RefWatch this morning to come out and say it was the wrong decision kind of says everything you need to know about it, really. It's baffling beyond belief.
If it was the other way round, right? Well, I just don't think we would have got the penalty. Like, I genuinely just think that ref was ready to give Man City a decision, and obviously the crowd were getting on his back at that point. And I just think it was, how could he have been sure to give that penalty in the first place? Like, he couldn't have seen that and was 100% confident that that was handball, because it obviously wasn't.
No, but that's what I'm saying. In the stadium, it looked like handball. On first viewing, it looked like handball. And he was nowhere near the play at all, obviously. But from his angle, similar to ours, from behind him, he just looked like, oh, he's got his arm, he's jumped with his arm, the ball's gone over there, and he's touching his hand. So, with the benefit of doubt of, oh, okay, if it's not, then VAR will save my arse. So this one is not on Big Fat John Moss. This is on our friend from down the road.
Indeed.
But this is where, Stu, fair enough that, you know, you've given VAR the opportunity to review the situation. Giving a penalty still gives you that chance to make the right decision. For them to then look at it, the amount of times that they did, I think when you think about the context of the game, the situation that we're talking about, the fact that Man City really hadn't got anywhere near us in terms of actually scoring a goal, apart from was the Cody header off the line before that, maybe. That was it. I can't recall a real decent chance before that. To then kill us, basically, with that decision, knowing that, you know, we've got 10 men on the pitch, how big a decision that is within the game. If you're going to have to watch this as many times as they did, it's basically inconclusive, essentially, isn't it? You should be able to tell what is a handball and what isn't. And the other thing I always think with handballs are, if it's going to be a subjective decision, basically, and it shouldn't be because there's laws to assess this, but if it's going to be a decision whereby, what is the point of the handball rule? The point of the handball rule is to stop someone literally stopping the ball with their hand going in the direction that it needs to be going. João Moutinho does not do that. He's not literally trying to stop the ball from heading into the... He is trying to stop the ball heading into the box. He doesn't hit his arm for a start, but Jesus Christ, how many people does it take to get a... it sounds like a joke, doesn't it? How many people does it take to get a VAR decision right? Answers on a postcard.
The whole point of VAR is clear and obvious error. And as soon as they start watching that, and even if it does brush his underarm, which it doesn't, even if it does, it only does that by hitting his side first. So it's not handball under any interpretation.
Why didn't the VAR team give the ref the chance to look at it for the monitor? Like, why did that not happen? Yes.
Exactly. I mean, we've all got our own conspiracy theories. Why, when you've got a Villa fan as your VAR refereeing, alternatively refereeing a game from a video monitor, and there's a controversial incident, who could possibly tell? Why he was maybe slightly biased. Maybe, who knows? But it's just inept. It's completely inept. It's bollocks. There's no we can kind of push your foot around it all we want, but.
I did hear another theory. I did hear another theory, which was basically this was on the Ramble, I think, earlier today, that the way we had behaved up until that point within the game basically put the referees on the side. They were probably getting quite frustrated with some of our antics. And you know what? To be honest, I can't really argue with that. It was a bit of indulgence on our side with some of the game's dark arts, shall we say. And that automatically puts us on the back foot within the referee. Now, rightly or wrongly, they should be as objective as possible regardless of what the situation is. But is there a potential to think, well, serves us right a little bit? I don't know. I'm just playing devil's advocate a little bit here. But ultimately, it was the wrong decision, bottom line.
even the Kilman handball where he kind of leaned into it? I feel like that one was more maybe a penalty because it did hit his arm and he did lean into it, as opposed to the Moutinho one. I don't think that one was it checked? I'm not sure.
T-shirt line, remember, Kim? T-shirt line.
I think even, was it Peter Walton or was it Dermot again this morning? He said the badge, didn't it? Kilman's one. Hit the badge. If it's the badge, then you're all right. But do we not think with this one, with Moutinho...
And I think his arm is actually being pulled away, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. I think with Moutinho's, though, I think that the hand position is just the get-out clause. Regardless that it hasn't, and this sounds ludicrous just saying it, not only has it hit his hand, it's not even hit his arm, or in the red zone where of the arm, you know, T-shirt line and below. It's not even hit that. But I think, you know, feel free to disagree, but I think that just because his hand is where it is, that's the ref's get-out clause, or Andre Mariner's get-out clause, that he just thinks, I'll give it because his hand shouldn't be up that high.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying before I saw the video back. I thought, well, his arm's in an unnatural position. He's asking for this. And clearly that's the influence they've gone with. But then when they've got the amounts of replays that they have, and one of the replays shows it not touching his arm at all, which, to get that image, I had to screen record the video off Twitter and then scrub through it by seconds with my little finger on the couch. But why do we have to do this? They've got all the technology in the world in their little booth in Stockley Park. Why was it not analysed properly?
Stu, I don't know. My fingers are too fat for that. I don't know how you manage that, to be honest. That's quite intricate, that is, like, to actually manage that with that detail.
Claw hands.
Too much time on his hands.
Well, I was on the way back from a good old session in Altrincham, were I? So nothing better to do than being a conspiracy theorist.
I'm sure even Peter Walton said that, like...
Also,
when you look back on the video of it, he says that it's inconclusive that he didn't brush off his, you know, upper arm. So the ref, you know, because he couldn't prove either way, went with on-field decision. Even Rio Ferdinand was going, come on, Pete, you know, there's defending
referees. If it's inconclusive, you are making a decision that leads to a, based on XG, 77% chance of a goal happening. Yeah. You can't make
stats.
What is basically a... There you go. I got that off Football Manager. Basically, inconclusive decision has led to a very, very high chance of a goal being scored. We should never be in that situation in football. Like, it just doesn't. It don't work. It doesn't work at all.
But unfortunately, if going on that logic, because it's inconclusive, then you have to stay with field decision, don't you? That's the problem. But it was conclusive because we've all seen it, and we've seen the definitive angle from behind the play, where it hits Moutinho's side and bounces away.
Problem is,
I'm trying to use
Andre Mariner's role there, right? He'll have looked at that, right? He knows John Moss gave a penalty. He'll have looked at that video. Surely to God, right? He would just say, should say, John, you should probably just go and have a look at that yourself on the VAR screen, right? And just take another look. Whereas literally, Mariners have looked at that and just gone, yeah, I've missed a penalty as well. Fucking bullshit. Like, there's no way that he's not. He should have just referred him to go and have a look at the on-screen monitor. Mind you, though, would you have any faith in John Moss reversing his decision, though?
Well, at least then he's giving. How many times does it when they get referred? How many times do they actually say, okay?
Most of the time, virtually all the time, don't they?
Yeah, they always go with a referred. If they get referred, decision. That's what the decision's going to be.
It's as good as you.
Yeah, so if he's saying, oh, Mossy, you need to have a look at this because it looks a bit dodge. And he goes out, trudging over in his little penguin, like, run that as you are. And he gets there and he sees that. I mean, surely, to God. I mean, even he wouldn't be able to say, yeah, I was completely correct there. No, you wouldn't, would you, because you're not correct?
It's an absolute farce.
It is a farce.
Do you know what's even more, well, as annoying, actually? Not, it's not even Wolves. I watched some of the other games, and the penalties that are given, they're just infuriating me, and I'm just neutral in the games. And it's like Ronaldo going down like he's been shot, and he was barely touched. Madison against, was it Burnley? He, like, basically just, like, kicked the defender's leg to get a penalty. And so it wasn't just our game that annoyed me. It was just the whole thing of all these decisions where I don't feel like a lot of them were penalties.
Some might say that Ronaldo one was a touch of a rapist. But you're right. Yeah, you're right. Because, I mean, you think about I think the Rafinha one for Leeds, I thought he won the ball, like, pretty cleanly with that one. Mm. And then the Rudiger one, Mateus Klich, when he fouled Rudiger, again, how is that foul resulting in a situation where you've got a 77% chance of scoring a goal? He's facing away from goal. He's not got the ball under control. And yet, it just makes no sense if you think about it. Like, and this is how big teams are getting away with results. That's the biggest problem with it, I think. Teams are, they're handicapped anyway with the finances on offer, the quality of the squads that these teams are hoarding. They're hoarding players as well. Like, they've got players on their bench that would walk into most of our teams, which is, you know, detrimental to basically the entire league. And then they're getting all the officiating on their side as well. I can handle being beaten the way we lost to Liverpool. Like, I'm okay with that. But the way we lost this game to Manchester City is just, you know, spits in the face of fans up and down the country.
And the other way round... A lot of those penalties, if it was, for instance, Norwich and it was Timo Pukki, it wouldn't have been given. If it was Adama Traore for us, it wouldn't have been given. So that's what...
Probably give a free kick against Traore.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I feel like, maybe that's enough of the general football chat, but I just find it generally a farce. It's not the fact that I don't think we're being particularly biased towards Wolves. It's just generally quite annoying.
The question then, have we just got the worst refs in Europe right now? Because it seems like all these decisions, and we can't seem to work out VAR amongst the guy on the field and the guy in the control room. Have we got the good tech, but shit operating the tech?
Well, we all said the same thing, didn't we? After the Euros worked very well, and then you start the Premier League up again, and it's... cock-up after cock-up in the first 3 weeks. And then you have like people like Dale Johnson on Twitter saying, oh, well, it's because they don't have as many people and you can't have a dedicated offside VAR. I said, well, it doesn't matter. They're not fit for purpose, a lot of them. And then the fact that these... I mean, I know we've kind of joked about John Moss's size and he can't run around. It's not, he's been bad for years.
And yet to be fair, in this game, he only had half a pitch to work in because the ball's only ever in the one half anyway.
am I right in saying it was Nuno who had a go with John Moss last year or the year before?
No, it was Lee Mason that Nuno had a go at. Saying basically, yeah, he's just unfit to referee, which is amazing to think like that he actually had that claim.
But there's so many of them. I've listened to this on some, I can't remember what podcast it was, but they were talking about it, like how, oh no, it was about like Formula One drivers, how there's people there who are just, people like Alonso and Raikkonen's retired now. I know you lot don't care, but it's the same thing that all these old guys are there cluttering up the pack when you've got a lot of young people coming through and they're just being denied by these chances who are just still like lingering on. And it's exactly the same kind of thing here. Like, we've got that guy from Australia who's now been fast-tracked into the Premier League after 1 year in the Championship. Because
I was just going to mention him actually as well. I was going to mention when you guys like it. It is quite funny when you see like these high, you know, these elite athletes are being reffed by people like Mike Dean and John Moss. Like people, you think then they're not in like peak physical age or probably fitness. But hey-o, there you go. We could rant all night on that, really. Gullit, you want to come in before we move on? Anything you want to add?
I just wanted to say, just to kind of, yeah, again, move the conversation on. I think if Raul stays on the pitch, we have a sniff of winning that game because I felt we were comfortable defensively pretty much throughout the fixture. I don't think Man City were poor. I didn't think they were very good at all. And if 11 versus 11 second half, you never know.
I don't think we would. We wouldn't have because we weren't ambitious enough. The whole game.
Oh, here we go. Here's the real argy-bargy coming.
We'll get on to that in a minute. I just want to say, before we move on to that line of conversation, we did have a good chance right at the end with the King, Max Kilman. I mean, we defended like stalwarts all game long. So City, apart from the Cody head off the line, didn't really have much of a chance. But I did think for a split second, and there's the chance on screen, you can see. I did think that it comes to about 90 minutes, wasn't it? And we had this little break where I just thought we can get something here. I honestly thought we can snatch an equaliser, and I would have gone absolutely apeshit if it had gone in. And it was quite close, wasn't it, Kilmer, right at the end? I mean, how mental would you have gone if you had got that in?
I mean, the place would have gone. It would have gone up. That it would have gone Traoré 2-0 game levels of mental after seeing that performance in the backs to the wall in the second half. But again, it only adds to frustration that we managed to do that with 10 men in the last few minutes of the game when, like Kim said, it was so... Yeah, the defence has been so good against Liverpool and Man City. We lost both games and created, what, 5 chances between 2 games. It's been that negative that... It's more negative than Nuno was. And I was pretty open about saying that if Nuno had still been here, I wouldn't have renewed my season ticket because I'd had enough of that nonsense. And I know, yeah, they're the best 2 teams in the league, blah, blah, blah. But we didn't have a go. And we had the guy on the preview show last week saying, from the Man City preview show, saying, if you have a go at us, that's the best way to get something, like Palace have in the past couple of years and stuff. But we didn't even try until the last minute with Kilman.
And it's like, 66 minutes is when Sterling put that ball in the net. And it took us till the last few minutes to be like, oh, we should try and get a goal because we're losing the game. And I think I'm not suggesting that we go gung-ho because we're playing Man City. I'm not that naive. However, we've seen teams like Palace get something against Man City and they haven't been as negative. And what I mean by that is when we get the ball, our passing's not good enough. We lose it. We were getting it and losing it. It's coming all the way back. And we just needed to have a bit of composure. And what we've got to realise is we're not Norwich. We're not Burnley. We're not Newcastle. I know we've got some... We need new players or whatever. We've got a small squad. But these players are mid-table to upper-table players. We're not as, you know, underdog and bad as we're making out.
On that line, so after the game... Pep made some comments and his quote was, it's difficult to play against a team that didn't want to play. So is that a case of more like, sorry, mate, we didn't play how you wanted us to? Or is it that have we actually played anti-football for the last two games? And, you know, should we or do we attack these like elite teams and risk getting a spanking? Would our fans be happy if we attack them, lose 4-0? So let's say if we lost 4-0 against both Liverpool and Man City, but we quote-unquote had a go. Is that any better or worse than what we've done in the last two games?
This is the thing that I find amazing when people talk about the fact that we're not having a go at these teams. Still, I'm gonna hark back to an episode of Set Piece Menu. Actually, I know you listen, Adam. Do you listen to Set Piece Menu as well, Kim?
Haven't recently
listened to Set Piece Menu. No. Well, they had a really good debate once about the way that we kind of perceive our own team's performances, and essentially, most fans, and this is pretty much everyone, only ever see one team on the football pitch, right? Whether it be, and it's obviously usually only their own team. So a bad result is always a bad performance from their own team. A good result is a good performance from their own team. And then whatever you want in between. There isn't such a thing that, you know, maybe Liverpool are stopping us from attacking. Maybe Man City are stopping us from attacking. Now, I understand that we are sitting back and trying to catch them on the counter-attack. What I can't agree with is that the Liverpool game last week, we didn't try to attack. I don't believe that, personally. I don't believe, personally, that we're more negative than under Nuno. I think we've found ourselves in situations where we might have given the ball away, where Liverpool have fouled. They've won the ball back in situations where we might have been looking threatening. Man City, just keep the ball away from you till, you know, the day, you know, until the second coming. That's just what they do. That's a difficult scenario to find yourself in. Now, if we decide that, you know, we're going to throw 3, 4, 5 men forward at, you know, a situation when we have won the ball back, next thing you know, we're going to get killed. Like, it's just going to happen. The space is going to be there. The way we were looking to play the game this weekend, I think, was to take the game to probably about the 70th minute at 0-0 and then probably come out and have a go at them and open up the spaces with Traore. Maybe he brings an extra forward on at that point. But if, like I say, I know we didn't show ambition in the first half and Raul's sending off has killed us entirely, I still think if we're 11v11, our plan comes to fruition, because we weren't threatened. I really don't think we were threatened in that game.
But which would be fine if we hadn't been so inept at Norwich, where we had exactly the same levels of ambition and we were equally as blunt up front.
But that's just us being shit.
Yeah.
But it's not just a one-off, is it? It's not just against Man City and Liverpool. It's in a lot of away games where we've literally just gone to defend against really mediocre teams that we are better than on paper.
But there's a difference between playing badly and actually the plan being something else. Bruno isn't setting the team up, I think, to give the ball away on the halfway line to make bad decisions when in possession. He's setting the team up to create opportunities to attack teams. If that doesn't then get implemented out on the pitch, to a certain extent, I got a bit of sympathy for him.
But that's his job, to get the players to do that.
I'm not being funny. Going back to that Leeds game, Adama Traoré started that Leeds game. He was on the pitch for probably about 70 minutes, I think. He completed 0 dribbles in that game. When have you ever heard of Adama never beating a player within a game? That's like, how's Bruno supposed to kind of legislate for that? He can't. His plan is when Adama gets the ball, he beats people. He didn't beat anyone. That's not on him, really, is it?
Yeah, this is what I said about the Norwich after the Norwich game as well, where he was moved out of position after 7 or 8 minutes because he did fuck all. He offered absolutely nothing at all, and he looked like he'd been playing for 2 days straight, and that's his attitude problem. And then look, amazingly, he was massively up for the last 2 weeks. I wonder why. But again, this is not having a go at Bruno at all, because we all know that he can only work with what he's got, and that's down to recruitment and financing. We all know that, but I don't get the absolute loving about how brilliantly defensive we are, because I think there's certain people on Twitter as well who've said the same thing, that yeah, it's all well and good when you just go to not let the opposition play, which Pep's got a point. It doesn't bother him. Why should we listen to him? Like Bruno said, it's nothing to do with him, but he's valid in what he says, because we went to spoil the game.
But then again, that's what a lot of teams do. Yeah. Like, we're playing Man City. What does he expect? We're not going to go gung-ho. So I think his comments were just a bit ridiculous, because we're not just going to roll over and go out all attack, are we, and let them score. I think this is a ridiculous comment. On the other hand, we need to get that balance right. We need to be better on the counter.
It's all relative, isn't it? When we were in the Championship, I'm sure we had teams that come and set up to spoil the game against us, and then we're doing the same. It's the food chain, isn't it? What you're saying, Kim, no one should be bothered by that, should they? Football, there's many ways to play a game of football, isn't there? And if we choose to do that...
Was it Sunderland at County Molyneux and we drew 0-0 and they literally just sat 10... It was a diabolical game of football. But, yeah, we've all seen it. You know, like you say, the food chain, we were top dogs in that season, weren't we? And they were Netflix Sunderland Till I Die kind of levels of shit. I'm sure that was the Netflix season.
It's pretty like small minded thinking that I think you see it quite a lot from Pep and Klopp that quote unquote smaller team in the league sort of comes up to their home ground and they just expect them to have like an open, expansive game against them. It's not going to work when, especially when Man City, their team, the whole squad costs about £1 billion or something stupid. You want us to like just come out and attack and go toe to toe? Is that not just like a completely flawed, stupid way of approaching the game? I mean, surely the element of tactic is that, yeah, we'll defend. We're actually quite good at defending at the minute, so you try and break us down and we'll get you on the counter.
What's the point anyway when you've only got half a stadium to entertain? Did you see the empty seats in that clip that you just showed at the Kilman chats?
Well, I was going to move on to that to Stu, because she was a man on the ground. So going to ask Steve your opinion on that.
Yeah, this is the Kilman chants again for the audio listener. This is later in the game, but it was like this from the start. There was at least, I mean, what's it old now, 53, somewhere like that? There was at least 8,000-9,000 empty seats all around the place, and it was dead. It was completely dead. There was
like that. I do wonder though. Hang on, I do wonder if it's to do with this whole COVID thing, because I noticed that Leicester, and I'm sure Leicester don't usually have that many. There was loads of empty seats. Like, is this a running theme?
Yeah, it's a season wide problem because.
And is that what affected Albion as well?
It ties into the although they've got their balloons out there so they can see whether the ball is actually being played.
I think Steve's gone.
We've lost him, or he's
having a really deep thought.
He looks like he's seen a ghost, to be honest. Fucking hell.
To be honest, Man City baffles me. Oh, there you go, Stu, you're back. Go on, carry on.
Oh, no, I thought I was there anyway. Oh, well.
No, you weren't.
No.
At least Man City, you normally get a bit of Blue Moon and you get that We're Not Really Here song.
Love a Blue Moon.
At least once.
Good beer.
None. It was just, let's sit here like good boys and girls, like we're at the theatre. And that's what over three tiers, it's hard to get an atmosphere going anyway, as we found at Wembley and whatever. So it's not the greatest place to get anything going. But it's been a running theme of the season where wherever we've gone, it's been just dead. And this has been, and the only two that are different is Leeds, because that I have a season last year in person, and Brentford, because it's both of their first time, and a lot of Leeds fans' first time in the Premier League. So maybe it's a bit of fatigue setting in. Maybe it's a bit of COVID there as well, that people don't want to sing and spread the disease. It could be a lot of things, but it's definitely a thing this season where atmosphere is awful throughout the whole league. It just is.
I do find with
but our atmospheres aren't even good either, are they? Our home atmospheres aren't good either, so.
I mean, it's pretty much everyone. There's been a reset, and everyone's been reset to like 20 years in the future, where we all like born with clappers instead of hands.
I do find City though quite like entitled, in the fact that they just sit there, arms folded, waiting for a goal to be scored, or like three or four ever score per game. It just seems a bit of a soulless existence, doesn't it? Because you get nine, what, 20 teams in the league, you're probably going to like brush past about 16 of them. Obviously, you can't beat yourself. But the other teams you're going to play, you know, all but Chelsea, Liverpool, and probably maybe United, I suppose. You know, you brush past most of them. So I don't know, it must be a bit of soulless existence.
I've got an idea. Why don't they create a league where they can play all the other big teams in Europe against each other and just live happily ever after and see how they, where that gets them?
Put that in writing.
You know what? I'll try and get a think tank on it, like a group together, and see what they think.
So, from the game, then any heroes? So, anyone particular, like Cody, or again, I thought Aitnori had a fantastic game. And actually, we had a Twitter question from Ben Massey, who posed a bit of a question for when Johnny comes back. I think we can all agree that at the minute, Aitnori is performing really, really well. He played, pocketed Salah, another good game against City on Saturday. What happens when Johnny's fit then? What happens to Aitnori? Does Johnny go straight back in, or do we tell Johnny he's got to sit on the bench for a bit?
If Aitnori continues to show this level of form, I think you have to say that Johnny will sit on the bench for a bit. I think the test will come where we need someone to be really solid at sort of in Aitnori's position, and Aitnori's looked maybe suspect, but at the moment, even obviously we know going forward, Aitnori is better than Johnny, you could say. However, I think still in the long term, Johnny's probably better defensively. But then last few games, you can't argue, can you, with Aitnori in defensively? I think he's been absolutely outstanding, marking Salah out of the game. And if he didn't get injured and we didn't have to take him off, we'd have probably come out with a draw then against Liverpool, because we probably wouldn't have conceded that goal. So, yeah, I think at the moment it's his shirt to lose if he continues to play at this level, personally.
And that's expecting Johnny to come back as the player he was as well.
Yeah.
And not someone who's been broken twice in the space of a year and a half. It's a massive ask to even expect him back to anywhere near that level, let alone without a pre-season under his belt as well. And I think the question's more relevant that does he replace Marcel on the bench for me? Because where's he going to play? He can't just come back after the injuries that he's had and just sit there and then expect to play. He's got to play under 23 football. He's got to build himself up again properly and not be rushed back. And there is no rush.
Yeah.
He's got plenty of time.
Thankfully, because we've got Aitnori playing well. I think the other thing worth remembering is the fact that we always wanted a little bit more going forward out of Johnny, I think. Even when he was at the top of his game, brilliant, solid defender, able to snuffle out any kind of attacker. But because he ain't left-footed, because he wasn't necessarily that great going forward. I know Aitnori's flattered to deceive a little bit going forward this season so far, but he is still a more natural player in the final third who is likely to produce a little bit more. So you almost want him, because if he's got both sides of his game now, he's becoming a complete wing back.
Absolutely.
Any other heroes from the game that anyone wants to call out?
I still think Adama had a good game. Like for the time he was on the pitch, I think ultimately he did what he could. And, you know, maybe there was an odd opportunity to actually go and take on three or four men, but you know, that's his job and that's the thankless task that we leave him with every week, and that's the standards that we hold him to. So.
Yeah. I think the two obvious ones are defensively, aren't they? Cody and Kilman. Obviously Kilman.
Unreal.
Unreal defensively. Did that little mazy run, didn't he, towards the end of the game. Obviously then got on the end of the header, and then I think there was a corner, wasn't there, again, which he nearly... From the resulting header when we had the corner, he nearly went close again. So I think for me, he was man of the match. Maybe you could say Cody, because again, he had the clearance off the line, was just generally really, really solid. But I would give it Kilman. Not that I'm biased.
In the club.
Even Gully's in the club now.
Oh, no, absolutely.
We've got to give special mention to Jose Sarr again as well, though. He's just, every week he just gets better and better and better. And it's all the fools who thought him for anywhere near a bad replacement. Humble pie all over your faces.
He didn't have that much to do, though, did he?
No, but when he did do...
What he had to do, yeah. Was good.
Yeah. It's his positioning, he's saving us points a lot more than people realise. And I think that's going to come down... When we're not playing someone of this calibre, maybe Brighton, when we come on to that, maybe somewhere like that where he's not overly battered and he's been well protected and he's not got much to do, that's when you're going to see the best out of him really come out. I mean, because we all know his distribution, that ain't been able to be shown for a few weeks, obviously. But, yeah, I just think there's no kind of worries anymore, is there? I think that's going to help him defensively as well, that they're just not worried about him. Yeah, he can go mental like he did in the Liverpool game every three or four games, but that's a one-off and he normally gets away with it. And so far he has done, but I just think he's brilliant.
Can we go on to villains now?
It's like you've got my notes right in front of you, Kim. I've got here, Panto villain. And Sace with a marker against Panto villain.
Can I rant on about this one? Because it's really, really annoyed me. If this was
the floor is yours.
If this was against another team, right, we would all be going crazy. But because it's our own player, it's okay. Well, it's not. Because that was absolutely embarrassing. Absolutely. Like, okay, so he got hit in the eye. I get it. But to roll around like a fairy... That was it's embarrassing. I just didn't understand the need, and I get it. All of our fans were moaning about Brentford a few weeks ago, right? And we were just as bad with it. And I'm okay with it to a point, but when you feign an injury like that, he was fine. He need to have two trainers just to have some eye drops.
Kim, are you telling Sace to man up?
Well, that's all I needed to say, wasn't it, really? I've used about 500 words instead of just two words, man up. Yeah, if he's listening.
But what if he wears contacts and one was dislodged?
I had that in a game the other day. And it was the most bothersome thing. Like, it's terrible.
Did you go down like Sace did, though?
I asked to come off, actually. Because I was like, I was just worried about losing it and like just not being able to find it ever again. So I just said, like, can I come off? Because I'm more worried about losing my contact lens than actually finishing the game. There you go.
Do you reckon Sage used those words with whoever flicked him in the eye? This is really bothersome, mate. Fuck off.
Bothersome. Raheem, come on, man.
Do you know how bothersome this is? But see, that's the thing, like, obviously, like, he was an art of shithousing there by Sace. But, I mean, it's the same people who probably say, yeah, let's get, like... I remember, like, everyone saying, oh, let's get someone like Diego Costa if we can, because he's a shithouse, that's what we need. But it's like, no, because everyone will get pissed off, like they did with Sace on Saturday, rolling around and just winding Sace. People up.
I don't think anyone did get pissed off, though, apart from me. No, I found it really annoying, yeah. Whereas if it was the other way... If it was Man City doing that, we'd be going on about it on Twitter for like a week. So it's like, we can't just be this biased. Wolves fans are the most biased fans in the world.
I do think this is where people are starting to abuse the head injury law as well. Like, obviously there was an actual serious head injury and Max Kilman's ticked off the best centre-back in the world requirement list to actually play with a bloodied headband now. So well done him. But like, obviously the rule now is that if there's a head injury, they just stop play, whatever happens. And I think there are the odd abuses to that. I've seen it in a few games, to be fair.
And after that head injury, Neves did get the eye test of how many empty seats can you see?
Lowest. That was brilliant. That's a great meme.
You're all right to carry on. Right then, so that brings us to a bit of a close on the Man City debacle. We'll take a break now. When we come back, we'll have a quick chat about Wolves in general, where we are, and then look forward to Wednesday night's game away at Brighton, if it goes ahead.
Attention parents and students, we have an incredible exclusive offer from our friends at ProPrep. This is the perfect study tool for university students undertaking science, technology, engineering, or maths-related modules. It can halve your study time. ProPrep provides bite-sized videos relevant to the module or course, which can be accessed from any device at any time. It has already helped over 500,000 students pass their exams. They provide customized STEM study tools that match your syllabus. Long lectures are condensed into short and clear video tutorials. After the video, you can go through what you've already learned with interactive exercises and practice questions so you'll be ready. You can even submit questions to the ProPrep professors and receive a video answer within 24 hours. ProPrep created a special offer just for our listeners. All you need to do is go to their website, proprep.uk/info/football, for more information, and our listeners can sign up today for a free 30-day trial. No credit card information required. That's proprep.uk/info/football. ProPrep, the ultimate study tool.
Okay, guys, welcome back to Fancast. So, guys, I want to talk, just before we get into Brighton, just a little bit about Wolves in general, about where we are. So we're coming in there into the busy Christmas period with a very small squad. Seemingly all of our goals and even their shots just seem to have dried up. So at the minute, Wolves have only scored 12 goals this season so far, which unfortunately for us is second bottom to Norwich in the league. We've only had 166 shots, which is the third worst in the league. Although, strangely enough, I do note that we are fifth in the league for big chances missed. So what we're, the little things we are creating, we're missing them anyway. But what, I know we touched on it a little bit earlier, but to delve in a bit more, how do you see us at the moment? Because at the start of the season, we were a revelation, weren't we? We didn't win any of our first three games. Lost them all 1-0, but we were having shots left, right and centre. Then our form picked up, even if our goals and shots went down. And now we just seem to be in the worst of both worlds, in that we're the shots and goals are completely dried up, and we're not even getting anything, any results out of our games at all. Do you see it as a bit of a concern at all?
I think he's almost... The first three games kind of... It's almost like he was spooked that playing that way and getting nothing and then thinking, oh, no, this isn't working. Even though we were unlucky in a lot of them, the chances that we actually did have in the first few games, it's so weird because it was almost like a switch had been flipped with him where he's gone, OK, you guys know what you're best at. You go and do that and we'll kind of work off that base. And that base has never kind of been worked from. It's like, okay, let's go back to what the tried and tested under Nuno. This is how you know how to play. You don't have to defend for the whole first half anymore, but still kind of stay in shape. And then he's moved midfield around slightly. But it's not what we kind of expected. And again, like I said earlier, and I said over the last few weeks, it's not his fault because they're not his players. You can't expect... It's like when you're trying to get Sol back into play with McCarthy's players. It was never going to work, even in a million years. Similar kind of idea. So it's going to take time. But at the same time, we kind of... If we hadn't had them three games and we hadn't had a glimpse of what was possible, I don't think we'd be that bothered. I think we'd all kind of accept, OK, it's a work in progress. It's going to take a while. But because we have had that, and because we had the West Ham, and because we had the game against Everton, however ridiculously bad they are, we've had glimpses of what's possible, and when that's then not continued afterwards, it's like, well, what are we doing here? And like Kim said earlier about the away games, we're a completely different team away from home. It's like we go to get a point, and against some dross as well. And so why, when we know that we've got the players to play better than we are, it's almost like he feels like he has to get the points first and then push on, which is not what he kind of came in saying.
It's almost like he's trying to prove that he needs players a lot of the time. And I feel like that's the case with, he doesn't change it early enough a lot of the time. And it's like, as almost he's like trying to say, we don't have the squad depth, I need players. I'm just running these players into the ground, which is kind of true in some sense. But I think it's a bit of both. I think he obviously needs players, like you said, Stu. But at the same time, the players, the 13, 14 players that we do have should be better than they are than they have been in a lot of games. And it's just those little glimpses in games where we played well for the majority of the games against Everton, against West Ham. And then to go back to this, I think the games after, like Leeds and I think it was Palace, I just don't get it. Like, I wish I did, but I can't. And I can't see how we're doing a 2 out of 10 performance 1 week, and then the next week we're going back to 8 out of 10. Then we're going to a 2 out of 10. It just doesn't make sense. I can't get my head around why that is.
I don't. It's a curious one because I think all the signs are there that we actually are quite a well-coached team. I think the fact that he's got the defensive setup working as well as it has, it is, shows you that he's got good coaching credentials. He's got players like Cody and Sace defending more proactively, looking solid. He's worked Kilman into a player who I think the way he's playing at the moment could basically play anywhere. Like he looks that good. Even our wing backs, like I say, you know, people have question marks over Semedo and Aitnuri. Defensively, they've been absolutely excellent. The problem being, we've got a bit of a one-paced midfield. There is no dynamism in there whatsoever.
And which that he noted, that, didn't he? He noted and came in, and he knows that.
Yeah, and ultimately, I think the dynamism in the team comes from Adama. Full stop. Adama played in those three games at the start of the season, created all that chaos, created all those situations where we were firing shots at goal, etc. But ultimately, we didn't create lots and lots of good chances. Now, what we've done, I think, against teams like Everton, as an example, we weren't as dynamic, we weren't as, you know, kind of fluid, but we managed to build play better, we created good chances, and ultimately, we managed to keep teams at arm's length as well. And he's trying to strike that balance, but we're gonna find these games where we're just, and we are in a pretty shitty run of fixtures at the moment, where teams that we're playing against are gonna make us look a bit poorer than we actually are. Now, you can't legislate for playing shit against Norwich. You can't legislate for the performance against Palace. Palace away was terrible, but they were physically stronger than us. They were quicker than us in all areas of the pitch. And again, it comes down to recruitment. But I still think Bruno is a good coach and we are a well-coached team. There are signs that we are a good team.
He is a bit mental considering what we've got. Question?
No, I was just going to say, even though from the outside looking in, it's the same as under Nuno because of the shape. But what Gulli said is right, how well-coached they are and they know their roles, and how we changed Moutinho and Neves to stay on one side of the pitch rather than one beyond the other has been a revelation for both of them. But they are so one-paced that when you have someone like the legend in making, who is Conor Gallagher, who destroys us, and you have teams who press us and we can't deal with it, what can you do about that other than defend en masse?
I think what's so surprising is he came in with the credentials that he was a really good sort of attacking style manager, and we're going to play this like free flowing attacking football. And in some, we've seen it in flashes, so I don't doubt that that's what he wants to get to. But I think the reality is we're not there in terms of the players that we currently have to our disposal. We don't have that dynamism in midfield. We don't have that creativity in midfield, someone to play alongside Neves, who's, you know, dare I say it, Renato Sanchez style player. Then I think the reality is, until we, you know, get some different style of players in centre midfield, I don't think a lot's going to change.
Can't talk about Sanchez. It was all a ruse.
That style player, though.
We've had the tweet in from at Linkswolf, who I think he's posed a scenario to you here. He said, Uncle Jeffrey, he's at the Christmas do, I think, he's got tipsy, and he's offered an open checkbook for any one of the following: Dele Alli, who apparently will be available, Joao Felix, Renato Sanchez, Coutinho, Talisca, Botman, who do you have? And he says, if he says he'll sell Traore, you can have another one. Who would you go and sign?
Definitely sell Traore, wouldn't you? If you could get two of those. You'd sell Traore because we've got loads of attacking players. We've got Neto to come back.
And you then you'd bring miserable, in... man. You
and then you bring people. In Dele Alli, Coutinho, or Sanchez, any of them with a bit of midfield creativity. And that's not me having a go at Traore. That's just me saying we need centre midfielders.
Dele Alli hasn't played well for about 3 years.
Nah, I wouldn't touch him with a barge pole.
No
way.
He needs a run of games. You never know.
But
you wouldn't take him on loan? Yeah, I know. But
he can go alone to MK Dons again.
You know what?
Jordan brought this up years ago, and that was years ago about Dele Alli, and he said the same thing he said then. Once he plays a few games, and he has, and he's just played shit. If he wasn't who he is, he would have been dropped, and he would have been down in the championship by now. Because
when he comes on loan in January and he plays a run of 10 games for us, and he top bins a couple, we'll remember this conversation.
I'll clip it out myself. It's never going to happen.
This is the thing, though. When we talk about adding dynamos into our team, Dele Alli doesn't do that. He's not mobile. We watched him at Molineux this season. I thought, you know, this was a player at one point in time. And, you know, he scored 15, 20 goals in the season, I think, when Pochettino was at his peak and stuff. But I think he's good at getting on the end of things and stuff. And the fact that he got man of the match in that game, against us at Molineux was incredible, because he was just, he wasn't good. But you just look at that deeper bit of position in midfield. You need someone who's going to break from there, carry the ball and make runs. And it just screams Renato. It does. Like, there aren't that many players like that in the world, unfortunately. And one of them is a Jorge Mendes client. And that's just the way the cookie crumbles for us, isn't it? So,
but the dream's over. He ain't coming, yeah. So... Yeah.
Well, we've got Santa Claus in our top left corner of my screen. So if we ask nicely and we behave ourselves, maybe we can get something after Christmas.
We all know we're going to get Gibbs White, and he'll be put there to fail.
What a player he's looking, though, by the way.
Yeah, because he's been playing in his actual position, like we've always said.
Yeah, but it's one thing playing that well in the Championship, but it's another thing playing well.
Leave him alone. Yeah. Let him get a full season, and then we'll unleash him next year.
Or sell him and get some money back.
Also, I think I can hear a grasshopper in the background.
Wow. They'll be back in Europe before we are, I reckon, won't they?
No, of course.
Probably under with Saye. Saye's still there. Saye,
he's director of football. Director of football.
He knows what he's doing. He's got a degree in all sorts of shit, hasn't he?
He's got about 12 degrees, I think, hasn't he?
He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to the Brighton game then. Like I say, well, if at time of talking, we are scheduled to play Brighton away on Wednesday night, up against Gully's mate, Mr. XG Potter. Two sides, really. There you go, yeah. Showing the love for the video viewers. Again, a tale of two sides struggling to score. So we've already discussed Wolves' woes about struggling to score. Brighton, not much better. They've only scored 14 goals this season. Now, we don't need omens, really, when we play Brighton, because it's practically illegal for Wolves to win against Brighton. It's just, like, seems like this unwritten football law that we just never seem to beat them. There you go. The stats are up on screen now for those that can see. So, out of six games, we've only won the one. I don't remember when that was, to be fair, but we drew four. Brighton won the one. Obviously, these are all Premier League games. And as I said, it's low scoring affairs, really. Wolves scored seven, Brighton scored seven. They are, without doubt, our bogey side. And to compound that, look at the form guide. Brighton haven't won in 10. Have not won in 10 games, right? So.
Yeah, we know what happens then. We know what's going to happen on Wednesday.
Adam, I'll tell you why you don't know why we, when we've beaten them, is because nobody was there last season.
Oh, there you go.
I don't even remember that.
Gibbs White with the winner. That was we actually played quite well that game.
Well, last time we played them at the Amex, It was actually, I say low scoring affairs. It was bloody 3-3, wasn't it? That's put me to right straight away. Wasn't it? Did we go 3-1 up? Yes, there we go. It's on screen again for those that can see. We actually went 3-1 up. So we're in a goal behind. Conley scored for Brighton. Then Sace, Burn on goal, Neves, all in the first half. 3-1 in half time. Lovely, lovely. 3-3, end of the game. We just cursed against this team, aren't we? What have we got to do to beat them?
They've got a few players out there, haven't they? A lot of players out with COVID, four out with COVID, and then they've got some suspensions and some injuries. So you know what happens? We still won't win.
For those that can see it on screen, I don't know what player it was, but his face is currently a mess of COVID right now. For those that can see it on screen. But yeah, I think was it Andy Naylor, I think from The Athletic earlier on today, tweeted out saying they've already got Dunk, Duffy, Webster, Welbeck, among others, out. They've got a couple that are coming back from injury. And then these mysterious three or four positive COVID tests. I don't think we know who those players are right now, do we? But as if the run of 10 games later, they think it was bad enough with all these players out as well. We're still not going to beat them, are we?
He's told us that. I bet it's like the backroom staff that have all got COVID or something. And he turns up and he's got a full strength lineup. He's like, hey, boys, how'd you go in there? Didn't I? But, I don't know. You'd think that he's a cursed manager, to be fair, Graham Potter. His team should be ahead of a lot more successful than they have been. Like I say, Mr. XG. That is literally his moniker now, isn't it? But with all those injuries, you'd like to think that we should be with the upper hand if the game goes ahead, and I hope it does because I've got a ticket. So,
loyalty, Brighton on a Wednesday night.
I know.
Must be
respect.
Would you, if it got called off before I set off? Say, what would you do? We've got a hotel booked. Well, we're setting out about 12, but we've got a hotel, we're stopping overnight. Would you still make a couple of days of it? Or
not in the state front, are you?
I would,
yeah, it's something to do, eh? Before everyone gets locked down for months on end, anyway. So
that's true,
you might as well go for it.
Yeah,
something to do before your COVID pass comes ineligible. Or invalid.
Oh, because I haven't had my booster. Yeah, Jesus. Expiration date.
Well, to be fair, with Brighton, I mean, start of the season, let's say they were top four, five. I mean, the XG was actually becoming G. They were getting the goals, weren't they? They were performing quite well. But then, obviously, in the last 10 games, the G's become F-all and they've not been scoring for love nor money, to be honest, and they've dropped the
but they've continued to play very well and they've passed around and created loads of chances, but they still haven't won, so it's pretty pointless, isn't it?
Yeah, and they're still getting booed off by their own fans.
Are they?
I found that amazing. That was amazing.
Oh, yes, yeah, Potter had a bit of a dig, didn't he? And his post match into, didn't he? Reminding them of their history.
Yes, he goes, I need a history lesson on the football club because I was confused why he's getting booed. But I think that I like watching them because, like you say, that there's always something going on with Brighton when they've moved the ball. It's with purpose. They seem to get into the final third, you know, at will almost in some games.
If they had a row up top, do you reckon that they might be like Champions League?
I think so, but they've got Neil Mopai, haven't they? So.
He ain't Raul, is it?
last famous words, that isn't it? He's gonna score a hat.
Last season, Glenn Moore, didn't
they? Oh god, what a terrible, terrible player, and yet what a successful one. But I don't know. They've got something. They've got some kind of secret formula going on, which means that they seem to play well against everyone. And yet. I'm starting to wonder why I bought a ticket to this game now, to be honest. Now, a record in the past, you know, the likelihood of us getting walked all over. And Loyalty Points FC, that's all I'm going to call it. Loyalty Points FC.
I was going to say, I'd be interested to see how many people are actually there. Just saying.
I think there's still actually tickets available, from what I understand.
I don't think there is there? It was sold out.
Yeah, but you get. I think people have returned them.
Yeah. I wouldn't imagine there's more than 1,500 actually turn up, to be honest. But then actually, no. Then again, you got London Wolves, so it's like a home game for them. So they'll take quite a few.
Brighton is not London. You do know that, don't you?
It's close to Wolverhampton, though.
Yeah. Stu's travelled the length and breadth of the country following Wolves, and he's confused. It's because you're not driving, isn't it? It's because you're just sat on the coach. You're not bothered about which direction you're travelling in.
It's because it's sat on the coach, slowly, like, frame by frame in videos on the way to...
he has no concept of where the coach is going, yeah.
Well, there's 41 tickets left, so there's still time to get a ticket.
If anyone is
looking for spares. There's
still a chance, folks, if you listen to this tomorrow morning, Tuesday morning, don't pass up the opportunity to go to a game that might be called off due to COVID. There's still a chance. You're still doing it.
41
official tickets and about 2,000 unofficial tickets on sale on the day.
You know what you should do? You should tell work that you might have COVID, you're getting some symptoms, so you're waiting on a test. Then get your COVID pass out and get all your stuff ready for that. And then you've got a free 24 hours at least, where I'm sure you're waiting on your PCR result. Nothing can happen. You're feeling a bit unwell for work, so you can't go into work. And then you might actually get to the game.
I'm sure there's a plan there. Or you'd rather just sit at home working, I think, rather than faff around driving all that way for the game to be one either called off or two we'll just lose anyway.
I'm more referring to those people that can't actually work from home. I know there's a jealous part of the country that, unlike us, Kim, I think, have to go into their place of work.
Yeah. Frontline.
Are you key staff, Stu? Key staff.
Of course, I'll be there. I'm at work Thursday morning, 6:30. So, no.
She never takes a day off. The weather's been share price a tumble if you're calling sick.
To be fair, when it was my birthday last week, I did have a bottle of Tsing Tao to work, but unopened. So I was walking out of it with Tsing Tao under my arm at like 9 in the morning.
Great morning. Oh. So what's their predictions then for Brighton? I mean, I'm not predicting whether the game will go ahead or not. I'm predicting if it does go ahead, what's the score will be?
I just can't see a scoring.
No.
I can.
There's no role.
That's the spirit, Steve.
No
role. Fabio's not going to play easy because he's doomed.
Do you know what? Fabio should get a chance. And not because I particularly... Not because I rate Fabio, but you know what happens? Every time we play three attacking midfielders and we have, like, Daniel Pedence up top and then we, like, kick it long to him and you just think, why? What is the point? So on that basis, we ain't scoring. Brighton have got a good defensive record, so it's going to be 0-0.
Okay.
Fabio got Lewis Dunk sent off last season as well, lest we forget. So he's got form against Brighton. Not a goal. He would have scored. He was one-on-one with the keeper. He definitely would have scored. But I just have a problem with us not playing with a central striker when we don't have Raul available. I think I don't agree with it. We're built to require a striker. You can't play with the three attacking midfielders. It don't work. So hopefully he goes with Fabio. And we're going to win 1-0 with a silver goal.
He won't know because he didn't even bring him on Saturday, did he? He intended just to bring on the attacking.
Let Fabio Silva take out his bad attitude on the Brighton defence. Let him do that.
I'd expect a 3-5-2 with Traoré and Hwang. That's what a terrible nightmare that is in my head at the minute. And if that happens, it's a 2-0 defeat. So, going there with all the joys of Christmas.
You're going to put a bet against us, aren't you, Stu?
Okay, yeah, but... Nah, not for that.
No, because Brighton are equally as bad at scoring, yeah. So that's why I bet 0-0, that's what will happen. 0-0.
Hwang up front, lone striker incoming. Tell me that name. Lone striker Hwang up front. So on that positive note, ladies and gentlemen, I think we might just have a quick bit of Twitter Corner to sign off on. Oh, there you go. Up on front, we've got a question there from Brian Donnelly. He's got two questions, greedy. One, he says that the saw the Brighton games got a chance of being delayed because of COVID. Do you want to play them? I think we've already pretty much established yes, but it'll be terrible. And also, question two, which Wolves Christmas sweater do you want? I haven't really seen the stock of Wolves Christmas sweaters. Have you guys?
I'm sure Stu has.
Yeah, that question was pretty
much
only one person.
The 80s, it's a sweatshirt though, it's not a jump, not a rich jumper, so it's like the one with the Wolf head in gold. It looks very 80s.
What's the difference between a sweatshirt and a jumper?
Material?
Oh, there's a big difference, to be fair, isn't there? Jumper's like a proper woolly thing.
Yeah, this is like a jumper, this PlayStation Christmas jumper. But
okay.
Like, if you look at Rich, jumper, cardigan.
Yeah.
And then you look at everyone else, hoodies, sweatshirt.
Every human being. Right, okay. Well,
that's kind of how these things work.
Right, so the question from Rob Cartwright. Unfortunately for him, he's been sent what appears to be a shitty Albion shirt, which you can see on screen. But his related question is, what's the most offensive surprise present you've ever received? For me, I'll just go on first this one. What's not necessarily offensive, it's confusing. A couple of years ago, I worked Secret Santa, and I was gifted on the Secret Santa this kind of furry octopus that was from our Chinese graduate, right? And obviously, I didn't hide my confusion stroke disgust it very well because she knew I was unhappy with it. However, it wasn't until a few months later that I was told that actually what she was giving me in Chinese culture was a gift of good luck and prosperity. So she took massive offence at me, like thinking it was a piece of shit, and I just chucked it to the side. And even my kids didn't want it. And apparently it was a really nice gift from her. So it was not offensive, but it kind of was at the time for me. I thought, because everyone else was getting gifts that meant something to them and like actual proper gifts. And I got a little furry octopus. So I was a bit put out and obviously I didn't hide it well. But there we go, that was mine. Hey, what's your guy's most offensive surprise present you've ever received? Stu, look like you want to go first.
I've never received one, but I've given one once that is kind of, it was accidentally offensive, but it was, I can't remember what the actual present was. I think it was probably a box set of something, but I thought it'd be funny to wrap it in bacon, and so I got this. So I wrapped it. I got this.
The only thing that should be wrapped in bacon is a sausage.
Yeah, but this is a while ago, and so I wrapped it up in bacon, and then wrapped that up in normal wrapping paper, and took it around Dean's house, and he gave it to his mum to put the rest of the presents, but obviously they didn't know what it was, and it was all squishy. But he put it by the fire.
Oh, overnight.
So it came down and there was this awful smell. And he said, what is it? And then he opened it and it was all bacon nonsense all over the floor on Christmas Day.
Oh, my God. Bacon smells quite good when it's getting cooked, isn't it? I thought.
Not wrapped around cardboard in it.
No, okay, fair enough.
What's the thought process? What made you think, right, I'm just going to wrap this in bacon. Like, I don't get why you would even think to do that.
There was a few years where I wrapped wherever his present was in something stupid. Like, there was one year I wrapped it up and I'd cut out loads of pictures of Giles Brandreth's head. But I don't know why. So when he opened the present, all these little Giles Brandreths all fell over his floor.
Please don't ask him about the thinking behind that, because we're not going to end up finishing this podcast if we go down this rabbit hole.
I prefer the bacon.
Yeah, I think so. I agree.
Goody, what's your most offensive surprise present?
I mean, I've got off scot-free, mostly, but there was one Secret Santa that it got me thinking quite deeply, but someone bought me basically like 3 tubs of hair gel. And it got me really self-conscious that someone thought that I really like took way too much care of my appearance and like too much product in my hair.
Was it like 50p barbershop special, all the bubbles in?
Nah, it was all right to be fair. And it must have been bought 2 years ago. I haven't even got through it yet. It's good quality stuff. But yeah, it just got me very self conscious.
Maybe it was a compliment that to say that you take pride in your appearance, as opposed to you're vain.
I mean, yeah, clearly I've taken the negative approach to that to that one. I'm just grateful to have a full head of hair right now. So,
Kim, what about you?
So mine isn't an offensive present. However, on my birthday a couple of months back, the concierge downstairs in the apartment that we live in like rang the buzzer and said, "Oh, you've got someone downstairs with a delivery." And I was like, "Okay." So ran downstairs, and it was a lovely bunch of flowers. So I was like, "Oh, that's really nice." And then I got upstairs, looked at the tag, who it was from, and it was from like one of my friends who lives down the road. And lovely like message, but apart from the fact that they'd put to Kim Grealish, and he's a Villa fan. And that he knew that that would just make my eyes roll out of the back of my head. So, yeah, I was quite offended in the end, but they were a nice bunch of flowers. So.
God, who'd want to be Mrs. Grealish?
Is he saying that you need to get the hair gel and do it like Grealish as well?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what he's trying to say.
Slick it back. Slick it back.
God knows what he's trying to say.
Right, next question is from KingWolf84. Following the incident in the Chelsea Champions League game, which Wolves player would do a Sam Kerr to a pitch invader? If you haven't seen this, this was in a Chelsea Women's Champions League game. I think they're playing Juventus. I think a bloke just casually strolls on the pitch, doesn't he? Filming away, which apparently is a loophole in the law. You can get away with walking onto a women's game because it's not a quote-unquote designated game, like a Premier League game, say, or, you know, Championship game. So he was taking an opportunity there, shall we say, and Sam Kerr took the baton and decided just to shoulder barge him to the floor, and then Judy got booked for it.
It's got to be safe.
But what player would you love to do that to?
Shoulder barge?
Yeah. I'd like to see how far Adama could send someone flying, yeah. But I don't think he's actually got it in him to do that to like a civilian. I think that they talked about it, a shoulder barging contest on the commentary and on the Saturday, didn't they? But he'd from the middle of the pitch, I reckon he could send him 20 yards.
Do you reckon if I did that, how far do you reckon I'd bounce off a Adama trying
away? Actually, if you actually went, oh god. Yeah, potentially.
I'd probably literally bounce back into the stand.
Yeah,
it'd be like that TikTok video that you saw online where someone doctors it, so you hit it and then your character just goes off the screen completely opposite direction.
And we should have put that as a question: how far, how high can Kim bounce off Adama Traore?
I feel that's something that we need to get in touch with Wolves with and sort out. To be honest,
yeah.
There's definitely like a YouTube video in it, isn't there? They do some silly stuff anyway, like Taskmaster.
Yeah, it'll be Saw, Sayce Kilman, Cody probably, Ruddy as chairman of the board. So, but then you'll get Troy Ryan as well. So get in touch with Josh, get it happening.
I do reckon Pedence has the potential. He's an angry little man, isn't he, sometimes, Pedence? He'd try, but fail miserably. He'd be like Scrappy Doo, wouldn't he?
Or just hold the boy's hand.
Yeah.
Go on, Steve, who would you most want to shoulder barge?
And who I'd want to shoulder barge? I mean, there's a...
In the football world.
Bournemouth team from the last 4 years.
Oh, Eddie Howe, then.
Yeah, Eddie Howe. Hmm. Oh, it's so glorious seeing him fail. They've turned him into a character on Atletico Minstow as well, where he's as Charles for some reason. I mean, it's just glorious.
Right. Have we got any more Twitter corner questions? I think we might have one more. Oh, there we go. Dover Wolves. Oh, it's a serious one. Discuss Moutinho's lack of goals and assists over the last 2 years.
I'm not about to start slating Joao Moutinho. I'll pass on this one.
He's never really been that kind of player in his whole career, has he, sir?
No, he hasn't. He had one season at Porto where he got a lot, but again, it's probably set pieces and against bad defences.
Yeah, it's whenever you used to watch him in the Champions League, he was never like one where he'd score, ever. He was just always there, just being a pest, making a pest of himself. And yeah, I think this is cruel. There's no need for this. The goals he has scored have been superb, which kind of think, well, yeah, he's got it in his locker. But it's more a case of, yeah, that locker's kind of permanently open and he's constantly hitting the balls to try and get there, like Neves has turned into.
I was going to say, one pro is that I feel like these days, Moutinho is more likely to hit a shot from long range and it go in than Neves. But then again, that's not saying that those shots are great from Moutinho. I'm just saying Neves' shooting's like awful. There's a pro.
He's just the metronome, isn't he, in the middle of the pitch. We don't measure him on goals and assists.
We measure him on quality of glasses of wine drunk.
And his good looks.
Also acceptable.
That's, he's pretty dishy, to be fair.
There you go, that's their...
We have got the most pertinent question in the entire show, though, that has to be discussed in depth.
Go on, fire away. Yes, I thought it might be this one. At CNRAD. I assume this is Conrad, the name of who's put this in. How many house cats are ideal? I'm going to have to defer this question because I mean, probably zero is my answer, but who wants to take the baton with this one?
I mean, there's a house that I go past on a school run every day that has got four house cats, and it's a flat. It's not even a house. So, and the windows are always shut for obvious reasons, so you can only imagine what it smells like in there. And that's my only kind of...
Good deal.
Just imagine the potential fleas problem as well.
God.
As long as they're well kept, they don't get fleas, and especially if they're house cats, it's very rare that that's going to happen to them. But you're changing the litter tray like twice or two or three times a day at least.
Well, you know more than we do, Steve. You've got cats, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got four, but they're not house cats. One's feral and lives in the garden. there's only really two of them that stay in more than they go out. But again, there's no.
Do they have morals of an alley cat?
Oh yeah, one. Well, Gizmo, he comes up battered. He's the only one who goes to the vet all the time because he comes up and his face is all mashed up all the time.
I've been to relatives and like they've had a cat and you pretty much don't notice that they're there. Like it's weird. Like I don't know why you'd want a pet that is so low maintenance.
No, but some of them are ready to like pounce. Like I don't like the fact that they're like still and then suddenly my friend's got a cat. It's called Jensen. He'll literally just like jump and it's like makes you jump out of your skin. I just don't like cats. More about
dogs. They're always on edge. And they're devious.
Yeah, they're a bit evil, aren't they, Phil?
Well, have they got an agenda?
Yes, yeah, basically, like
The plotting. They're just plotting.
Yeah. One day, Stu, you're going to be forced out of the house by your own cats. You've got too many. You need to whittle them down a little bit.
Well, there's going to be a cat uprising in your race, Stu. And the feral one, the feral one's going to have you. He's been fighting every night. He knows. He knows a thing or two. So I think we've come to the conclusion then that the ideal number of house cats is zero.
Yeah.
Sorry, Steve.
I'd still say house cats is one, two absolute maximum for the.
Yeah, you're sitting there with four.
They're house cats. They can go out whatever they want.
But it doesn't. What's the? There's no difference though. They're still weird creatures. Like they're still not friendly. House or outdoor.
As are human beings, I guess.
True.
When they wash themselves and they go out and then they roll around in the dirt and everything, then they don't smell as much, which is kind of like the opposite of what you'd think. But when the, if they're always contained in the house, again, it's I've been in houses where you know it's a cat house, and it's like you can smell it from the front door, outside the front door. It's not fun.
God, that bad? I won't go in.
Yeah, it was.
Jesus,
I ain't gonna name name names on that. Even though I'm not that cruel. But yeah, it's like the ones where you think, oh, the amount of people, they're hoarders, you know, have got like dead cats under newspapers and stuff, and they never get rid of them.
Oh. What, dead cats under a copy of the Sun from 1992 or something like that?
Yeah. Michael Heseltine on the front cover.
That's not just leaving it. That's called a burial. That's not just leaving them under a pile of newspapers. or written on the newspaper is the name of the cat, the date that they died. Don't you know that?
Well, if there was on pastry, he was a happy cat. He went the way he wanted to.
Absolutely. Anyway. Absolutely.
On that note, listeners, if you're still listening at this point, thanks for listening to the podcast. As ever, always, you can follow us on all the social media channels on Twitter, on Instagram and YouTube. Please go and subscribe and like. We would really appreciate it. So all that's left is to say bye from Stu.
Bye. And if anyone wants to come and talk to us at Brighton and make us happy, me, Gully and Matt are all there for your pleasure. Ta-ra.
There you go. You can't refuse that offer. It's goodbye from Kim.
Bye. I will be in the pub watching the game. Win the warm.
Are you not going to extend an offer to come and talk to you either in the pub?
No, I was going to say, can we meet you in the pub, Kim? Can anybody come and meet you in the pub?
If you make a 4-hour trip back, again? Yeah. I haven't decided
which,
yet.
Which pub was it again?
Oh, wait, no, I won't be revealing that online.
Are you sure?
Undisclosed location. And it's also a goodbye from Gully as well.
Yeah, it looks like I'm just keeping Matt and Steve company at Brighton, to be honest. That's the postponed fixture on Brighton seafront, like after the postponement of the fixture. So let's see how it goes. See you guys.
And it's also goodbye from me. I'm watching it at home and no, you're not invited. So stay safe and see you all next time.